many times have you thought, I would love to do this or that? Maybe write a book, start a charity, create a kids' puppet show, build a sustainable clubhouse, go on the trip of a lifetime, create a production company. Whatever that thing is for you, I hope this podcast inspires you to believe you can. I'm Karen Vaughan, and this is the Get Off the Bench podcast. Howdy, and welcome back to another week of the Get Off the Bench podcast. This week, I am chatting with Tracy Lund. I did have Tracy on previously, back in November 2022, talking about her journey into politics, and which she didn't even want to do, just happened that way. And back then, we did talk about the Morwell mine fire and unpack that a little. It's now 10 years on from the mine fire, so I'm going to do a little bit of we're just going to do a really quick recap on that to see if there's, you know, what outcomes have happened for the community. But more importantly, well, I don't know it's more importantly, but the bigger part of this interview is we're talking about People's Kitchen, and it's an initiative by the Morwell Neighbourhood House to address some of the food insecurity issues going on in Latrobe Valley. I was fortunate enough to be part of it in January, and it was just such a fabulous day and just so wonderful knowing that we're making so much difference to the lives of people that we'll never meet. So we're going to talk about that. This is a really wonderful conversation. So let's get into it. So Tracy, how are you going?
I'm well, thanks, Karen. How are you?
Fantastic. Tracy, I've already had you on the podcast in November 2022, and we talked about, we talked about a lot of things, your journey into politics, which you never even wanted to do in the first place, but, you know, a lot of that was sparked from the mine fire. It's now 10 years on, and so I do want to touch on that because I want to see if the government has actually listened or someone's actually listened and done something. But also in January, I came to a kind of cup to be part of the People's Kitchen and, you know, like a volunteer group to cook meals for people experiencing food insecurity. And I absolutely loved it. So I'm going to take a breath in a minute. So I was going to do a podcast based on just my experience of it. And then I thought, as I started to think about it, I thought, oh shit, I don't really know enough about food insecurity in Latrobe Valley. You know, all I could say is, well, I had a bloody good time, which isn't quite enough to say, you know, what the big problem is. So that's why I wanted to get you on. However, since then, I've seen the Morwell mine fire, that it's been a 10-year anniversary. And then I started to get very curious about, well, shit, 10 years is a bloody long time. There's been a lot of bloody inquiries. And while I didn't personally experience it in Morwell, I'm an hour away, it doesn't seem to leave us. You know, it's something that lingers in the community, some bitterness about it. So I thought, let's just have a quick 10-minute jump into the mine fire so that we can give people a snapshot and a sort of where we're at now. So I'm going to take a breath, and you can give us a snapshot.
Yeah, I think. Look, I'm happy to speed date through the mine fire. It is 10 years on this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a significant event in our community. I'm so sorry, my phone's ringing.
It's all right.
Sorry, picked that up for me. You know, it had a serious impact in our community. What happened was, and I think initially the fire was being framed as a bushfire, which is how it started, but it quickly turned into a hazmat fire. And from there, at an even faster rate, it turned into a health disaster. So what we had was our community experienced thick, heavy smoke, almost raining down on it for 45 days, to the point that those immediate health impacts were being experienced straight away. So people were reporting things like heavy head. I, for example, my description of it at the time was a thick head. It felt really heavy, and my thoughts were really muddled, and I had a lot of struggle breathing. But for me, the immediate impact was around my eyes. So just to give you a bit of an insight, that my eyes would burn and sting, and then I ended up with a condition after that, which I still have today. And actually, only a few weeks ago, I had to have one of these lumps scraped out of my eyes. So we know that people experienced first immediate impacts, and many, many in our community have experienced more long-term health impacts, and they range from minor to quite serious. So for me, reflecting back on 10 years, and I don't want to dwell on this, there's been a significant movement in our community where people did mobilize, and I think I've spoken about this before, and almost the people that you least expected ended up having to stand up and give voice to this, that we were experiencing a health crisis. And that pushback, and I think I've reflected on this a few times this year, from community, was driven by women, really driven by the voices of women and the power of women. And because that happened, the way that it did, and I was certainly one of those people, and it's only probably been the last few years that I've been even comfortable about talking about my role in the response to the mine fire. But I also had to unpack, and I think this is something for women in leadership, how gendered and how vicious the response from some in the community can be. And that's a really stressful place to be in when that's something that you're not choosing either. And I didn't understand that fully until I experienced that through my role in advocacy in the response to the mine fire, and later on in other roles that I've taken on in community. So I think that's something I think that we still experience today, 10 years on. And it is something as a community, when we're talking about gender equity and gender equality, it's something that we really need to reflect on. We always need diversity at our decision-making tables, and to do that, people have to be supported in those roles. You don't always have to agree with everybody, but they have to be supported to be able to stand up and have that voice, because it is a really confronting, very almost paralyzing position to be in when you're being attacked purely because of your gender. So, but anyway, I want to move on from that. But I just thought I'd raise that it's something
That's
that's still
important.
okay. I think, anyway, it's something that I do think about quite a lot, about how do we make that safer for people, both online and in community, to be able to have that voice. But in saying that, there were voices, there was certainly a considered community pushback that did end up in two inquiries for the mine fire. And I think we learn a lot. One of the things that I really reflect on is that on the ground at the time, the government stakeholders and or government of the day were saying, we can't evacuate, there's no protocols, there's no smoke triggers, and there wasn't. And because there was none of those things, the good people of Morwell were left to sit in this smoke, basically, and it enabled inaction instead of action. So one of the pieces out of the inquiry is that we do have now have smoke protocols, and there are triggers to remove community from events. We understand now that the health impacts from smoke is significant, and we need to protect people. So in many ways, that's just one example, and there was many, many other things that fell out of the inquiries in terms of improvements for communities experiencing disasters or the impacts of acute shocks, as I like to refer to them too, because you never know if it's going to be industrial or it could be climate. Recently we had COVID. Whatever those are, we need far better messaging to community, and we need to understand what the triggers are to respond. So a lot of those things came out of those inquiries, which I think in another decade to come, we'll be reflecting on again about how far we've come from the experience of the mine fire, and how that industrial disaster, which was probably one of the biggest of its kind in Australia, impacted and shaped the way we respond to emergencies going forward. Significant bodies of work in there. Certainly, we've still got a long way to go, but you know, definitely heading in the right direction if I think back of where we were 10 years ago and then where we are now.
Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that because, you know, I think I might have said right at the very start, you know, sometimes people just don't listen, you know, and 10 years on, we're still in the same situation. But for you to say that, that's really, I'm really glad to hear that, you know, that 10 years on, yes, there were inquiries that actually yielded some results, you know, some solutions, and now moving forward, hopefully things are better. It's a shame that people had to be so severely impacted in the first place, and that it was ignored. You know, it was ignored as a potential disaster in the first place. But I think that we're not perfect. We go for progress, not perfection. You know, and if we are moving in the right direction, then that's great. I also love what you said about the gendered stuff. And yes, it is. It can be like that. And there's quite a few older, how can I say, more staid members of the community, that are male, that tend to think that they own the community. And I'm going to say it, you know, you're not, but I'm saying it. And it's bloody, I've seen it happen more often than not, you know, where women are just shut up, and you don't have a place. And I absolutely love that you're talking about how do we find a place for women, you know, to have a voice. I'm going to just say one more thing that's nothing to do with you, but I'm saying one thing that I find absolutely more abhorrent than that is women taking down other women. And I just think that if we don't raise each other up and hold a floating ship where all women can have a voice, we're absolutely screwed. So there are women out there that are utter bitches attacking other women, and I fucking don't like it. Do you know, because it's like, no, we are one bloody team, and if we're going to change the close this gender gap, we need to bloody well stick together. Now I'm going to switch the conversation because I get quite cranky and quite online.
I can see that. I do,
and it even paralyzes me to a point where I almost feel inadequate in a way, you know, to it's paralyzing because you want to do stuff about it, but you kind of don't know what to do. So I kind of tend to, and it's not the right thing, but I tend to bottle it and then I have a big bloody rant about shit. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, people like me where we're watching, we're getting annoyed, we're getting frustrated. You know what I mean? We're sort of feeling stuck, but it happens. So if you're a female out there, be fucking nice to other females. And if you're a man, just consider that there are two voices or more voices at the table, and make sure we bring in, and I'm just talking about gender, even though that's even bigger than two, but even diversity, we've got to bloody consider other voices and other people's point of view. Now I'm going to stop. Let's get on to a much nicer subject, because otherwise I could have a whole podcast on my own just ranting. So listen, a kind of cup, I absolutely love, like as I said at the start, I came to people's kitchen, you said, hey, what are you doing on, I can't remember what day it was, January, one day in January, come to people's kitchen, want you to volunteer for the day. And I'm like, yes. And one good thing about that is that a lot of people want to volunteer and often don't know how. So that's a beautiful thing that you're offering. But you do it through Mall Neighbourhood House, but you run it at A Kind of Cup. So I'm kind of taking back a couple of steps here. A Kind of Cup is the you can describe it better than me, but the social enterprise, you run a cafe through Mall Neighbourhood House. And that in itself, you know, tell us about setting that up or what it's about. And you also had big hiccups with that because of bloody COVID. Like you just got it started and then COVID.
Yeah, then we had whiplash COVID, I call it. So just to sort of, I guess, sort of frame what we're talking about today, we are talking about the People's Kitchen. The People's Kitchen is an initiative of the Morwell Neighbourhood House that we set up in about 2018, 2019. And it was really looking at the time, we were really looking and talking to our community about, is it enough for you to come to the food bank and get a tin of spaghetti and get the foods you need from the shelf, and is that all we needed to do? And the very loud response we got was, no, you know, we need more things. And we know that. But it's sometimes a bit like you're describing. It's sort of really, you know that something needs to change, but you're not really sure how to go about it or what do we need. So through various conversations with our community, we looked at our food bank being more like a whole person support. So we brought in, we have our puppy dog who is very unwell and isn't here at the moment with us. We have somebody that Julie that comes in and cuts hair, and we schedule that once a week. So things like that, we started to look at what other things that can we wrap around food bank. And then we started to look at the food on the shelves. So that fills an immediate need and we absolutely need that. But we don't, it's not necessarily nutritionally valuable for our community. And then, you know, and I did explain this when you did People's Kitchen. One day, I don't know why, I started looking at the health indicators for La Trobe, and the key health indicators see us punching above our weight in all the wrong directions. So higher rates of heart disease, higher rates of diabetes, you know, that sort of space. Yeah. So we were, our key health indicators are going the wrong way. And then I was starting to think a little bit more about if I've got, say, you know, I don't know, the numbers I've got coming into community, which I think into the food bank, which I think at the time, I can't even remember, so I'm not going to guess on the numbers.
Yeah.
And if their first port of call is the food bank, which is predominantly shelf life items, what hope do we have of turning this around unless we can diversify what options we have in food bank? So that sparked the idea of the People's Kitchen, of cooking nutritious meals together and making them available in the food bank. So we did that. Like, we could have at the time called Fair Share and maybe got some meals brought in it that were already frozen, but we would then be, you know, we'd keep going with that transactional model and we wouldn't be including our community in one, you know, in the, I guess, the response to food insecurity.
Yeah.
But, and I really always want to work from a connected community model rather than doing at people or for people. I want to, I'm always looking at how do we work with you to do this? What does that look like? And it, you know, it's evolved over time because of COVID. So that was 2018, 2019. In that mix, we did, the committee did take on a Kinda Cup Cafe, which is the social enterprise arm for the Moore Neighbourhood House.
Yeah.
The idea behind that was to bring people in to train them, get them to about 80% of training for hospitality, and then they could move out into the broader community, into Gippsland, wherever they needed to go to do that work. So we know quite often, like, cafes and hospitality venues are really stretched for time, and it can be really difficult to, you know, be showing someone step by step and allow them that opportunity to build the skills they need. It's not impossible. But certainly, you know, having staff on board that are already 80% trained or you know, have worked in hospitality is a real asset to hospitality venues. But we wanted to work with people that had significant barriers to employment. So they may be long-term unemployed. They may have a physical or an invisible disability, something like that. So we started that, but we did have COVID.
Yeah. So, yep.
So it went on and it went off and it went on and it went off. And then eventually, because the viability was so bad during the peak of COVID, the cafe did have to close. It has reopened, and reopening it has allowed us to have the opportunity to do People's Kitchen at the cafe. So the cafe runs Monday to Thursday, and on Friday it's closed as a cafe and opens up as the People's Kitchen, which was the incredible project you did with us earlier this year.
Right. Yeah. So, I thought you were going to say something else. So, which is fantastic. And it's a small space, you know, it's only a cafe. So it's kind of like, there's a lot of logistical organization, you know, you two do this, stay over here. Now we'll do that. It was absolutely fantastic. The group that you put me with, none of us knew each other. And you just sort of set up six of us, you know, and said, well, here you go, you six can meet each other.
What you all had in common was that I have your phone numbers. And it was great. Like, I, you know, because I do know you all, I was really, I guess I really felt like it was a good group to bring together that didn't know each other.
Yeah.
And that was really important to me because we did want to experiment with you a little bit, which we did, because we want to, you know, we had some ideas about what we were going to set up for it this year. So just to give your listeners a bit of a broader understanding, we bring six people in each Friday. Business and industry can book teams in to do this. There is a fee to that. They are, and that's to help us cover the costs of the food and the catering for the day.
Yeah.
That group comes together. They then work together for the whole day and they cook meals now. And they go into single serves. They go into our freezer at the food bank here at Morwell Neighbourhood House. So they come from the cafe down to the house and they go into our freezer. They also go to other locations. That's what they were doing last year and we're about to gear that up again this year.
Yeah.
So we know that all roads shouldn't and don't lead to Morwell Neighbourhood House, and people that are experiencing food insecurity, whatever that looks like for them, should be able to get it in a community that they live in.
Yeah.
So we have Churchill Neighbourhood House coming on board and Moe Neighbourhood House coming on board as well. And part of the program this year is that we'll be expanding those distribution centres. So you'll see us on our socials start to pop up, you know, with other locations. This is, it sounds easy and quick, but this is a really invested piece in community. Mm. So it works. I can't just jump out into another community and make these things happen.
Yeah.
A lot of this is about building those relationships and building those connections. So, you know, it's already expanded quite significantly, but you're going to see more expansion to that work over the next 12 months because we really want to make sure those meals are being made locally by locals for locals, but they can also be accessed in distribution points that are accessible to immediate communities and that are really place-based so that they don't have to traipse down here to Morwell Neighbourhood House. And it's not that we don't want to see each and every one of you, but we think it's more important for you to be able to access what you need in your own community as well. And certainly if you can't get it, you can more than welcome to come down here, but we want to try and broaden that up for everybody. So significant body of work, but it is a bit of fun. So I don't want to sound like it's hard work. You come in as a team. And we do lots of activities together, but we do lots of fun activities together. So the music is pumping. I hope everybody likes my tunes. I do take requests.
Oh, yeah, I loved it, yeah.
big fan of Kenny and Dolly and lots of sing-alongs. So there's lots of dance and lots of movement, lots of getting to know other people, and everybody is contributing to building and cooking these meals. And basically we'll cook between 100 and 100, we just did 140 this week.
Wow.
Meals.
Yeah.
And then we distribute them, out through our community. Now, just to give you an idea, we pump through well over 100 a week just here. So, because a few people have asked me, do you really need to do it every week? And I'm like, I wish we didn't.
Yeah.
But we do. If we want to keep this going, so it's our local people responding and supporting our local people, which is what we're really passionate about. And I just want to say here before I get any further in, this project, while it started with a small grant of $10,000 and Tracy's got an idea, it's morphed into this big response, like a really big connected community response to food insecurity that is unpacking it as, you know, we know it's a big social issue and it's a big wicked global issue, but what can we do in our own community? Yeah. How do we respond? And it is connecting many pieces of business, industry and broader community together. But it's only possible, the upscale that we've had has been possible through our partnerships with La Trobe Health Assembly and Energy Australia Yallourn. And I just want to acknowledge both of those because one, they've invested in the Morwell Neighbourhood House and this project, and they are very, very strong supporters of the work, and they're very committed to working together as a holistic piece. So if you think about the Health Assembly, the Morwell Neighbourhood House and Energy Australia Yallourn all coming together like that, that's a really powerful group that are working on this, and they're coming from cross sections of community. So it is, well, I do lots of things in community. The People's Kitchen is by far the one that I do the most work with at the moment. But certainly I'm extremely passionate about the work, and that's largely to do with the response that we're having. And the impact that I see, but also the investment from our partners, which is incredible. And that's, I will also acknowledge all the people that sign up for People's Kitchen, Business and Industry. We're booked out for the year. That gives you an idea. So every Friday till the end of the year, I think I've got one booking left for this year. So that gives you an idea about how invested the broader community is in this project and getting us to do the work. So it's incredible from my point of view and really powerful.
Yeah. So I was telling somebody about it, and, you know, because you're talking about us recognizing that there's a major problem and all that kind of stuff. Now, I was talking to somebody about it, and they said, well, what for homeless people? And I said, it's more than homeless people. Like, there's a lot of people. And they were like, well, who? Like, I don't see any of these people. And I was a little bit flabbergasted. I was kind of like, oh. And I actually I struggled to find an answer. I did find an answer, but I was like, it took me back. You know, it really took me back to think that, do we, and this is not a criticism of that person, but I think when you're not involved in it, you know, or when it's not crossing your path, you know, you're kind of like, it's pretty naive, I suppose, but to have the assumption that everyone's sort of sitting about where you are. But there is a – what sort of percentage of Latrobe Valley would be experiencing?
Look, I would hate to put a percentage to it, but I can sort of give you some numbers if that's helpful about what we see. If you just give me a second, but I just want to address the what you see.
Yeah.
Predominantly, and this is one of the myths around food insecurity – is that sometimes you can't see it. Food insecurity is, I call it it's an invisible issue. It's a wicked issue, but it's invisible. Because, the people sitting next to you or the people that you're engaging with will not necessarily say that they're experiencing food insecurity. And it can come on different levels.
Mm.
So it may be people that are homeless. But predominantly what we see is people that are living below the poverty line. So they may be living with the assistance of government supports, which we know is well below the poverty line. Mm. Or they may be working. And a lot of our numbers are showing us at the moment that many of the people accessing the food here or coming to the food bank are actually working. And they may have been previous to COVID in a position where they got by every week. But with the spike in the cost of living, people have had to prioritize housing. So they have to, you know, whether it's their mortgage or their rent. And we know that those have all gone up. I'm a homeowner, or paying my home out for my mortgage myself went up $700 a month. Mm.
Yeah.
But that discretionary income that you may have had to get your groceries has shrunk. And then when you do go to the grocery store because of the spike in rising costs, you're getting far less for the money that you would normally allocate to your budget for groceries. So what it means is that we are seeing a spike in people that have never had to access food banks or food supports before that are now needing it to top up through the week or to actually get them through the week because they have to prioritise their housing, which they absolutely should. You know, in the housing crisis that we're experiencing, that once you lose your housing, it will be next to impossible to get another, rent a property or buy another home or be in that position. So, so I feel like the thing that people can get elsewhere is food.
Yeah.
And that is why we're seeing such an increase in the demand for food supports across, you know, certainly across, I would say it's across the country, but I can only speak for my own little patch that I'm working for, but certainly here in Latrobe. I'll have to look up the numbers for you because I don't have them on me. But just to give you an indication, when we did our numbers for this year, at the end of last year, we'd seen 700 people more in 2023 than what we saw in 2022. So, and
Wow.
those numbers, those trends of that 500, 600, 700 have been going that way since 2020. So every year I do the numbers at the end of the year, we've got a spike of, 500, 600. Last year it was an extra 700 people we saw just in this service. So yeah, so it's extraordinary the amount of people that are experiencing some level of food insecurity. And it can come, like I said, in different, that you mightn't necessarily see somebody on the street starving, but behind closed doors, you can't see that they're only eating one meal a day or they're only feeding their pets, because pets are really important to our mental health and well-being. And many people will feed their pets before they feed themselves. Or that kids are missing school because they don't have their, lunch or stuff like that. That's why you're seeing a rise in schools respond to with breakfast clubs. And more recently, I think it's Rotary and the CWA are working together to do cheese sandwiches and have them in the freezer so they can be toasted for young people when they're at school. So the health impacts of food insecurity are quite significant as well. And that travels around, like, it impacts all of our community. So kids experiencing food insecurity can have difficulties concentrating. It can impact their learning and their growth. People experiencing insecurity, food insecurity, are making decisions around what bills to pay and whether they can have their medication or not that week. It's really deep, and it really filters, like it's a real splinter effect. It filters right across our community, but it is not necessarily a visual one where people are holding a flag up saying, "I'm experiencing food insecurity."
All this stuff behind closed doors. And when you're talking about the impacts, of kids missing schools and it's a self-worth issue as well. Do you know your confidence starts to get eaten at, and I imagine too. And while I don't want to be attaching these two definitively together, but you're becoming frustrated and fearful and overwhelmed, and you can't think clear anymore, and that sort of leads to violence, and that which could be domestic violence, it could be just violence against anyone because of your frustrations. It actually is a community issue. It's not, well, too bad for those people living behind closed doors. They're hungry. They're fighting each other. That's bad luck. It's not that. This actually filters completely into the community. And I actually see it as our responsibility as a community to care for one another. And like I said at the start, often we don't know how, but we should. Now, and this is my opinion, some people may disagree with me, and I'm just maybe forcing my opinion, but I believe we should care for those around us. Even if we don't know what to do, bloody well care, be compassionate, be kind, just make these people, whoever they are, make everyone that's around you feel that they're worth something.
And I think whatever that little bit is for you, like, and this is something I talk about at People's Kitchen, is that we can't solve this. Like, as a global thing, this is a massive, wicked issue. But the little bit we can do in our community is around educating all of us around what it looks like, how we can respond, providing opportunities for people that have the means to volunteer or support in some way to be able to do that. And that's what's great, I think, about the People's Kitchen, is it does provide those opportunities for people that do have the means and the desire and the heart to actually respond in some way, and gives them a pathway in. Certainly, some of the feedback we get is incredible, that they've contributed to this day. They've really felt really good about themselves, which is one thing, but they can actually see what they've done, where it's going, and they're really, really committed to supporting people that they don't know in our community, and largely they don't know them. And I think that's a really big piece that comes out of it, that people are contributing their skills and their time to support people that they don't know. And that's that essence of kindness that I think the People's Kitchen brings to some of that work. And I just want to flag right now that I'm a passionate People's Kitchen advocate, but I will hand on heart tell you, while this work Is something that I can talk about. There is so much work being done by really good people in our community that are doing incredible things to support more vulnerable members of our community, to connect the pieces and the work together. We are not the only ones. And you should, I would put a shout out to your listeners to look around their own circles and see what is happening, what's being done, who they can connect to look at how they can actually contribute in their immediate communities, because it won't necessarily be here at our people's kitchen, but there'll be something in your community that you can support as well. So, and there's so much of it, and it can be really easy in this day and age, and I'm guilty of this as well, of getting a bit overwhelmed with the enormity of some of the issues we face in our immediate communities, but also globally, with climate change, with, things that are really out of our control.
Yeah.
And one of the great things about the work that I get to do is that I get to bring it back to basics and bring it back to place.
Yeah.
So I get to look at where I can make a difference in my space, in my community, and I get to do that. And that's one of the things that I think has really empowered me to have a voice in community and keeps me going every day. I think I might have spoken about this when we last met, is that that's why I come down every day. It's why I get in my car, because my job has an impact, and I don't see it as a job. This is like, it's heart work. But how lucky am I that I can go to work and do stuff that I am passionate about and that I can make a difference in, and I get to see and work so closely with community, and not everybody has that opportunity. Many people go to jobs, and I'm forever grateful that I've got heart work. And if you can't do that in your day job, I'd encourage people to look at how they can volunteer and do some of that heart work, because it not only makes you feel good, but it gives you purpose. It keeps you focused on the good stuff, on, I don't know, for me, it keeps that overwhelm away. Like, this
well,
is
it does. No, it does. And it also increases your own self-worth. And you said there's three things. Well, you said a ton of stuff in there. There's three things that I really sort of want to emphasize again, is that when you said, you can only, it is overwhelming. I do a lot of global work, but I am always freaking overwhelmed. I'll admit that. I seem to have my shit together, but I'm constantly in despair, about the stuff that's going on around the world. But I keep coming back to exactly what you said, is that we've all got a piece of the puzzle that we can control. That if we all do the best in our piece of the puzzle and put it in the puzzle, we're actually going to make the puzzle, well, we're going to do a better job of it. But a lot of people get too overwhelmed and they don't look at their piece of the puzzle. But what can I do? And I love that. And I love the other bit that you said about helping strangers, because I've always said that. I've helped thousands of people around the world that I'll never freaking meet. I'll never know who they are. But there is something about it's hard to explain. It's almost this deep, I was going to say pleasure, satisfaction, but it's deeper than that. Like it's almost a spiritual. Yeah, you shifts purpose. You a purpose. It shifts you. And so purpose. If you can help strangers, it's not about who does this go to. I need to meet them. Just know that you're in a position, and then that actually leads me to privilege. It's privilege is a problem, and we can't help being born into privilege. That's where we are, right? For those of us lucky, I think it's 2% of the world or something, who are lucky enough to be privileged. We can't help that. And to feel guilt about that isn't helping anybody, but it's saying, well, what can I do with this privilege? What have I got that you don't have that I could actually support you with? And the last thing is, the other thing you said is, volunteering. What is really sad, and I've noticed this trend for years, the last maybe 5-6 years, is that volunteering is going down. There's less and less and less volunteers. And I don't understand that, because we've got more volunteering is going down, mental health issues are going up, and it's well known. Like, there's so much research to show that when you volunteer, it is actually helpful, you know, to reducing mental health issues and it and health issues. Many of your health issues, I won't say fixed, but are reduced when you do volunteering. So a lot of people say, I can't because I don't feel well and I can't. But if you do, you will actually be helping yourself just as much as you're helping those you're helping. So,
yeah, and I'll just touch on volunteerism. It is, you know, the global trend is that volunteerism is going down. What's great about the People's Kitchen is it's bucking the trend.
Yeah, I know. So,
yeah, it is bucking the trend. And as a manager of a neighborhood house, it is one of the things that I've really struggled with is how do we support volunteers to do their good thing? Because when four neighborhood houses, for example, and some have different levels of staffing, we have extra staffing at the moment through project funding, not through the funding of neighborhood houses, but they're funded for one person to run, you know, community development programs mm-hmm. over so many hours a week. So it's a real struggle if it's only one person, how you divide that time to support volunteers to do their good thing or their work in community, because you still need, even to set it up, you know, they've got to be, people have got to be interviewed and security checks have got to happen. And it's not like it was 30 years ago where you can just go, I'll just volunteer. You know, there's things that have got to happen first. But then they've got to be supported in those roles so that they can do those things very well. And if you're running a ship of one person, it's almost impossible to be able to support five volunteers to do things as well. So one of the great challenges in these, I guess, these situations is how do you support volunteers? But, you know, you actually need the staffing to actually do some of that support work to ensure once people are up and running, great.
Yeah.
But for an organisation like this, I can't just drop anyone into food bank. They've got to, you know, there's training that's involved and, you know, then they've got to be supported. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it can be, you can have some difficult situations. How do you work through those? So you've got to be there around all the time. The People's Kitchen for us has been, you know, even when we first started doing it, people wanted to cook and be involved, and that's because they're cooking for a purpose. They could visually see where it's going. They're contributing to something. There was all sorts of reasons for that. But when we started to escalate it into this bigger picture where business and industry come in as well as small teams, so team building days, we started to see almost straight away, it really took me by surprise because I was like, oh, nobody's going to come. If we get three book in, then, you know, like my bar was pretty low in terms of what my expectation in terms of volunteer from business and industry was going to be. But it absolutely blew me out of the water. I was not ready. This organization was not ready for it to be booked out for months ahead of time. And we scrambled to get on our feet. But what we did learn was that short, sharp, coming in as a group was really important. And what I learned about that was rather than trying to just get one person in to answer the phone or a person, you know, to I don't know, unpack the boxes at food bank, whatever it was that we needed volunteerism for, is shaping it as a team building exercise actually was really powerful because business and industry and people across community are wanting to do something, but they might only have one day. They can't commit every Wednesday at the thing to unpack the boxes or whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
So having that one day where they can go, right, I've got one day and I can contribute 6 hours and I'm just, you know, this is what I'm going to do for the day was really powerful rather than trying to lock people in. Now, I'm not saying I've got the magic solution here, but being able to do that with this project, and not everyone's got projects that they can, you know, shape that way, we were able to shape it so that we could have volunteers come in. Now, I will say I have spoken about business and industry a bit today, but just to be clear, we also cook with our community. So we cook with Ladder, the Ladder Young Folk, the Kickback Young Folk were just in. They're all starting back again this year. We do have, I think, is it Sassy are coming in. I might have that name wrong. So we've got other groups in the community that have booked in, and we do that through the week, say on a Wednesday at the house. But the bigger team building ones are actually done at the cafe. So it's not in isolation, and it's not just one group of community that we're working with. Now, most of our Wednesdays are booked out as well, just now that's all. Now, when I do those numbers at the end of the year, they're all volunteers in that program. So just to give you an idea, last year for 2023, we had 395 volunteers through just the People's Kitchen program. So that's not any of the other work that we're doing in community. That was just counting that project. So I've just given you that number because that's what we're talking about today. So those numbers for 2024, we are already well on track to have that or more come through the project. And as other satellites open up, I think we'll see those numbers broaden again. But I think, again, like I said, it's one day, or it's 4 hours, or whatever it's going, whatever shape that they're coming in, where they're committing to one session. So they're not having to commit to, I've got to come in weekly or fortnightly to a thing. And we've just found that the people are gravitating to that opportunity. So I think people do want to volunteer, but we've got to provide, we really have to start looking at how we're providing those opportunities and how we can mix them up a little bit so that people can volunteer in a way that is meaningful for them, but actually works in with their time frames and their availability. And that's a real challenge. And my description of being, one solo person, I can tell you that is something that we really struggled with over the years. We've always had volunteers, but being able to support them well and have meaningful opportunities for them to engage, is a real challenge. And I think everyone's experiencing it. Plus, with COVID, everything sort of was on and off and on and off. And those that were volunteering then, they started to sort of move away from that. And that's okay. And I just think that's one of those challenges we have now about how we re-engage and community to volunteer, but how we maybe reshape some of our programs and projects as well so that we provide broader options.
And I think volunteering too is you this is a generalized statement. It's definitely not true for everyone, but you almost have to be fairly secure and stable yourself. And so when we're talking about, you're talking about people just taking a day out here and there. It used to be that we could work 4 days and volunteer on a Friday and stuff like that. But as you're saying, with the cost of living going up and, and housing going up, we're not getting the luxury of working just 4 days now. It's kind of like, well, I have to work my 5 days and I have to work my second job on Saturdays and I've got to cater to kids, and so it's volunteering does not have to be a regular weekly thing. It's I think it just helping others where you can, and even just kindness is, I think we forget the I think we forget the health impact that that brings to ourselves and others, just random acts. But absolutely, Tracy. I've loved this. You said you're pretty booked out, but if an organization says, well, that's fine, I still want to put our organization up and we'll wait 9 months. I don't care, because I still
I
want
think
part of it.
I have booked you in there, Karen, for much later in the year. I may have sent you an email, but
No, you haven't. So you better do
haven't
that.
I? All right, well, I might have written it. Let me get back to you because we'd love to have you back because one of the great things about the project is so many people coming through, and it gives us an opportunity to tell the story about the connection piece and what it means and connect. I don't know. I think, when you're a storyteller and you're much better at it than I am, but the
Oh, I
importance
don't
of
know.
story in place really enables us to share and grow that program because, I learn something different each week that I do this. I develop a, open up the opportunity for new connections. And I get to share things that I learn along the way, but I also learn from other people. And I think that power of story, that power of connection, we can't underestimate it. And I think it gives us that center of place of, purpose and, I guess a connection to that broader community that we are all in this together.
Yeah.
We're all experiencing different versions of things, and different things are going on in our lives, and there's certainly lots out of our control, but there's lots in our control as well. And it's just such a, I don't know, it's just for me, being able to connect in with people like this is just something that I really, really value, even though sometimes on a Friday I'm dragging my butt into the cafe because I'm exhausted, you know, because it's been such a big week. And the minute I get there and see everybody's faces and, you know, and everybody's got a coffee and we're ready, rearing to go, there's not a day that I don't blink on a Friday and go, oh, gosh, it's 3 o'clock. The whole day's gone. Because it just, it goes so fast and everyone's engaged in it and, you know, everyone's just having a really good time. So my message to business and industry and community out there, if you want to get involved, don't let my booked out schedule deter you. Please reach out, because we are looking at how we are open up other opportunities, and you know, to do that we need to understand the community want that to happen as well. So please reach out, because we'd love to talk to you. And if there's not that opportunity, there's certainly other opportunities in our organization, or like I said before, if it's not us and it doesn't have to be, there are so many amazing things happening in community that are supporting grassroots, that are supporting local ideas and local energies. You know, reach out to someone in your community and see what they're doing and see how you can contribute and help.
Yeah, absolutely. And if they do want to reach out to you specifically to come and help with the People's Kitchen, are they reaching out to the Neighbourhood House or to?
Yes, directly to the Neighbourhood House. So more Neighbourhood House, reach out to us. I'll give you our phone number.
Okay, go on.
5134 5488, or you can email us at coordinator@morewellnh.org.au. And you can find us on socials. We're on most socials. So we're on Insta, we're on Facebook. Where else are we? Oh, we've got a YouTube channel. We don't do a lot with that, but
yeah, but still it's there. And, and the website. Yeah.
And our website, yes, of course. Yeah. And you can contact us through the website as well. So, look, if you're wanting to reach out to us, by all means, do that. And watch this space. We've got a lot more to come that I can't talk about today, Karen, but more to come. And there'll be more ways for people to volunteer and contribute and support. And certainly if it's not with us, we do know a lot of community organisations as well. So we're happy to connect you in with somebody else that might be doing some great things in our community as well.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I'm going to put a challenge out there to anyone who's listening from industry. Just bite the bullet, even if it's a phone call to find out. So, Tracy, that number again?
5134 5488.
Sounds like a telethon, doesn't it? But seriously, just write it down. Just screenshot this time on the podcast and go back and say, what's that number again? And just go, you know what, I'm going to ring. We might not be able to do it. Maybe we can, but I'm going to ring up and find out, because it certainly is one hell of a day and it is fun. Tracy, when Tracy said she learned something every time, she probably learned that, you know, I'm probably the best boogie dancer she's ever seen. But
you are also the sauce queen. The sauce queen.
I ended up with more of it on me than in the pot, but anyway.
Oh, yeah. But you were stuck there for a while, and that's the thing. Like, be warned, you might get stuck on a station and you could be there for hours.
I was stuck on a station.
It's a lot of fun. We keep you caffeinated.
Yeah, well, it was better than rolling chicken balls, so it was absolutely fantastic. But Tracy, thank you so much for joining me. I've absolutely loved this. I wanted to focus on the People's Kitchen, but I did want to touch on that Mindfire stuff, and you've given us a lot of hope with that. But particularly with this, the People's Kitchen, and particularly with what you've provided us, is that there is hope. You know, there is a Tinkerbell opportunity. It's kind of like Gremlins are coming in right now to tell us, give us a bit of background music. But there is hope that for people to volunteer, and there is hope that communities can do things to change situations and to improve situations. We can't save the world. We never can. But you know what? If we can make one life a little bit easier, then that's worth everything. You know, that makes our life way more purposeful. So thank you so much. I really appreciate all that. Love you.
Thanks so much, Karen. I really love talking to you. So anytime. And thanks for joining us on the People's Kitchen. And I can't wait to see you back there again.
I can't wait either. All right. Go. I better let you go so you can get back to the cafe and do all your dirty work.
More cooking.
I know. All right. Thanks, heaps, Trace.
See ya.
Bye-bye. Ta-da. Oh, guys, that was fantastic. I absolutely love the People's Kitchen, and I love any opportunity to be supporting other people within the community and where you can. I mean, clearly we've all got our lives to live, and clearly we're time restricted and, you know, that kind of stuff. But even if we can just do the slightest little thing to help another person. But if you want to go a little bit further and volunteer, it could be Moral Neighbourhood House, it could be the People's Kitchen, but it could be something else. But if you're listening and you're part of an organisation and you think, wow, that'd be a great idea for a team building day, and you're unsure, like there's no obligation, but I'm going to give you that phone number again, 5134-5488, and ring up and just find out about it, because it may be just that day you're looking for to bring your team together. So that's for six people. Anyway, I love this idea. We're not going to be the only community that is suffering with food insecurity. And I think that perhaps a little kindness goes a long way. And you look at that person next to you and don't look at them and accuse them of having food insecurity, but you don't know. You don't know what's going on behind closed doors, and people are struggling. So if we can just extend a lot more kindness to each other, then I think we're moving ahead in the right direction. So I hope you enjoyed that. Also, you can send an email through Morwell Neighbourhood House, which is coordinator@morwellnh.org.au, or just go to their website, morwellnh, I think it is, .org.au, and send an email. So hopefully you enjoyed that. Hopefully it gave you a little bit of insight into what's going on around your local community, or just even if you're not from Latrobe, it might also be happening, likely is also happening in your community. All right, that's it. Have a fantastic week. Thank you again for joining me, and I'll see you next week. See ya. Thanks for joining me. I hope this episode inspired you to take action. If you'd like to reach out, then I'd love to hear from you. info@getoffthebench.com.au, and check out my website, KerenVaughan.com. Otherwise, keep believing in yourself, celebrate the tiny wins, and keep moving in the right direction.